You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 429 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this nice Thursday evening, and joining me first time in about 2 months, the great Coles Wicker of Estepien. What's up, man?
How's it going, man? It's kind of interesting to not be on for a draft-related conversation. Now we're talking young prospects. Always fun, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's I shamelessly steal this idea from you and Sam Vecini on the Game Theory Pod that you guys have been going through the entire league and breaking down all these young prospects. And I heard you guys talk about the Hawks, and I was like, I want to talk about these guys too with Cole. So let's just go through that. I mean, obviously, last time I had you on the podcast, it was before the draft, so we didn't know who the Hawks are going to take. We did talk about a few guys that they ended up drafting. So I want to start with the rookies and sort of how you thought that draft went, because you know, obviously, the Hawks took three guys in the first round. No, I guess one pretty big surprise in Amari Spellman. Herder was not a surprising pick, and then of course the Trae Young thing was very high profile. But I guess we can dive deep into those guys if we want to here. But what do you think about the whole draft itself that the Hawks actually managed to pull off? Because there was a little bit of surprises in there.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think I have to segment it into two different parts of the analysis. I don't agree with passing on Luka Doncic at three, so just make that very clear. I think I was pre-draft on this podcast said that he's very clearly my number one prospect. So from that vantage point, I didn't support that decision. But once they moved back, I did like what they did. So it's kind of weird. It's a weird calculus and a weird juggling act here. Like, I like taking the dice roll with Trae at number five. I think that the upside is there. If he really hits, he's going to be kind of a high variance player. But if he hits, he's going to be one of the best offensive players in the league. And I think he can manage and kind of run a high level NBA offense. We're talking about a top 10, top five offense potentially. So I liked what they did once they did that. I love Kevin Herter. I had him 11 on my board. So getting him at 19, this is where I thought he'd go. In the draft, I love that dynamic. Of course, we can see and we hear all the time about this poor man's kind of Warriors effect where you're trying to recreate Steph and Clay. Of course, the bet is that neither of these guys are that good, but I think both of them can be very, very, very effective players, high-level players. So I appreciated the approach as far as getting two guys that were two of the best four or five shooters in the draft, can shoot off motion, high-level offensive players. And I think Kevin Herter's a little bit underrated defensively as far as his team defensive instincts. At 6'7", I think he's going to be able to survive, maybe kind of like Kyle Korver. And then Amari Spellman, I'm not a huge fan of the pick, but at least, again, I get it conceptually. There was the Draymond talk. I think that's, frankly, kind of insane. This is the first one where the comparison even at a poor man's level doesn't really make any sense. But for me, I was a little disappointed in the summer league play as far as one specific skill, and that's his pick and pop shooting above the break from three. That has to be there for him. I think that he's kind of like maybe like a Mo Spates kind of player who can pick and pop, shoot the ball from three. And then he's really good, actually. He's got pretty good speed with the ball, good coordination, attacking the rim on closeouts. But he really has to get that pick and pop three down to, I think, have high level value.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought, I've talked about this a lot, so I don't want to talk about myself too much here, but the Spellman pick didn't make much sense to me. It just felt like a reach in a big way. I thought, at 34 it would have been high, and they gave away, they traded the 34th pick. At 30 it felt kind of optimistic, but, it's summer league. I wasn't terribly impressed and kind of didn't see any much that I was overly surprised by, but something I didn't particularly enjoy. I want to ask you about Herter, actually, because we spent so much time on Trae, with good reason, but Herter, the fact that he didn't play in summer league, I think people are sort of like almost forgetting about him at least a little bit because of the fact that he wasn't a high profile college guy. There was a lot of helium for him during the draft process to where he rose all the way to where it was not a surprise that he went number 19 overall, but then he kind of faded away without playing in summer league. So you mentioned his defense. That's probably the number one point of concern people have with Herter. But what do you make of him as a rookie, I guess, just because I'm not sure how he's going to translate immediately. I do like the package of skills. I think he's an underrated playmaker, to be sure, with the ball in his hands. And obviously the shooting is like the big appeal of him. But how do you think he's going to look early on? Because we don't have the benefit of actually seeing him in summer league sort of make some interesting judgments there.
Definitely. I think it's pretty intriguing. I saw him up close at summer league. He was on the bench and some of the pre-draft pictures that were circulating with him, I don't know if you remember this, but he looked pretty big as far as they had him in the weight room, and he looked bigger. He did not look that big.
Standing next to him in a couple of those like scrum kind of things before and after games, he's not very big.
Yes, exactly. So he has the size at 6'7", but he doesn't have that same build. So maybe in time he builds his frame up to be more NBA level. I think that maturation process is going to take a little bit of time. So as far as an immediate plug and play guy, I think he's going to be able to fill a role, but physically, I'm not sure if that's going to be there right away. It's going to be more of a developmental play. I mean, he's just 19, so it's going to take a little bit of time to acclimate. It takes these non-outlier athletes that are more skill guys a little bit of time to assimilate into the league, but I do think he can be an immediate contributor as far as his ability to shoot off motion. A top two or three guy in the class at that. We're talking about a guy who can sprint off a floppy set, sprint off a down screen, shoot a 30-foot kind of backward momentum shot on the move without barely setting. He can, it's so fast with him. And at 6'7", I think that's where you get kind of the Kyle Korver comparisons. Of course, it's not a good bet to bet on somebody being like one of the best 10 shooters of all time.
Right.
Like, that's probably not going to happen. But as far as conceptually, you get the idea. He's not as big as Klay Thompson, but when you watch him and you squint, that is who you see. He has more ball skills, and he doesn't have the same level first step. He's not a very good athlete as far as explosiveness or like speed, but he does have a little bit of secondary ball handling acumen with his good handle, and he really sees the floor. He has kind of a point guard's mind, and that's what I really liked about him is he brings – his main profile, his main skill is going to be his off-movement shooting, but he brings these ancillary skills that you can come off a dribble handoff, for example. He can either shoot or he can pass immediately over the top with his size. He can make a skip pass read. So I think that that is the skill set that you're looking for if used optimally. And, you know, he's going to be primarily off the ball in a secondary setting, but overall, you're really banking on that floor spacing, that off-movement shooting dynamic.
Yeah, I do think, him having the ball in his hands a little bit more than you would think. I think guys, for the most part, Hawks fans have not really seen him play. They kind of just know what he's supposed to bring. And that's the shooting. Obviously, the fact that he's a 6'7 white guy, you get the Kyle Korver comparison. And I do think it's pretty pretty apt in some ways. But I think he's a little bit better than – not that you think, but that I guess the general consensus thinks with the ball in his hands as a playmaker and some other stuff with the ball. You know, he can at least be a little bit creative and see the floor reasonably well. He's not just a catch-and-shoot only guy. He does have some skills beyond that, which is nice to be sure. We can transition away from the draft, guys. I wanted to ask you about a few of the off-radar guys a little bit. The Hawks have these they have four, I guess, of these wing types that are on this roster, and because the roster is sort of unsettled right now, one or two or three, or maybe even all four of these guys are going to see some real time this year. I kind of want to go one by one, see what you think about these guys. The first one is almost like a combo 3-4 at this point in time, Justin Anderson. I've always liked him. I listen to you and Sam. I think Sam is like how I am, like holding on for dear life with Justin Anderson for no reason. I think we kind of know why. I think we kind of just acknowledge that. I'm not really sure why I like Justin Anderson, but I still do. What do you make of him? And he was sort of a throw-in in that trade, but also a guy that the Hawks clearly like.
I don't mind the dice roll on him, frankly. Like, I understand the thought process in giving this guy a shot. It just comes down to the shooting. That's really what it is. I think his defense on the ball is pretty good. He has the physical strength. He has the quickness. I don't think he's a great off-ball defender to the level he'd need to be to compensate for the other deficiencies in his game. But straight up, I think a career 30% shooter from three, that's not going to get it done. He has no off-ball gravity. We saw him play in the playoffs a little bit for the Sixers. I think it was against Boston or Miami, both of those teams, and nobody really guarded him. And I think that's the ultimate bugaboo with his game is he's not a playmaker. He's not someone who's going to create an ISO or pick and roll. If he's going to be a pure catch and shoot guy, nobody's going to close out hard to him. Nobody's really going to guard him. So that kind of messes up your offense. And he's not like an Andre Roberson level defensive player. So that's who he'd have to be, is more of a stopper type for me to be really interested in him as a potential, like maybe lower end starter, high level role player. But I can definitely understand at least giving him some minutes and seeing if that shooting materializes, even though he is already pretty old, and I don't think that is necessarily the best bet.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm not seeing too much in the way of optimism there, but at the same time, there's not really all of these guys that would keep him off the floor that makes sense, especially if they want to play a little bit more small ball this year, which I think is sort of the buzz right now. Lloyd Pierce hasn't come out and just said that, but I think all indications are that, you know, Bud was kind of anti-small ball, didn't really like to do it a whole lot. I think this year you're going to see some of these lineups when you have Torian Prince at the four or Justin Anderson at the four or, you know, Alex Poitras when he's around maybe at the four, that kind of thing where you're going a little bit more small ball, and I think Anderson might be a little bit better fit in that kind of role as well. few more guys, sort of, I guess, they're all very, very different players. Daniel Hamilton is one, and he's the guy I'm probably the least familiar with, sort of a walking triple-double threat at the G League level, but that was a pretty surprising signing when it happened. It kind of came out of nowhere. I hadn't heard much about that interest on either side, and I kind of like him. I'm watching a little bit more film of him, but at the same time, he's sort of a weird player because he's almost like this point-forward type, but I'm not really sure what to make of that in a system where he isn't like the primary focus.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head here. Very different archetype and someone historically that I've gravitated towards. He has a lot of playmaking acumen. We saw it at the college level. Can initiate your offense. He's a good ball handler, good passer. He just doesn't have a pull-up game. He's not a good shooter. So he's not good enough to play with the ball, and he's not good enough off the ball. And I don't see any like high-level team defense instincts. I haven't watched a ton of his defense as a pro playing for Oklahoma City, so I don't have a great read there. But I think the idea of him is really interesting if he can shoot. And I understand, again, giving him an opportunity, because if he can shoot, I think he can conceptually dribble, pass, and shoot and be a two-way player, maybe like a lower-end defender. And those guys are really hard to get. So I get the thought process. I just would bet against him ever being a shooter, because that's never been what he was as a prospect or a lower-level pro.
Yeah, to be sure. I think it's a situation where it's a one-year deal. They're kind of taking a flyer on him, and that makes sense. I also think they almost signed him as the third point guard because they don't really have one. They have Jalen Adams, who's on a two-way contract, who Sam loves, I know. But it's a situation where they only have they have Trey and they have Jeremy Lin, and that's kind of it. So I almost think that Daniel Hamilton's like almost like the break glass case of emergency third point guard type, which is kind of funny to think about that way because he's not obviously that size, but he's sort of the role he might play.
That's very intriguing. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd say intriguing, but it's interesting to have that dynamic. He kind of like DeAndre Bembry can do that a little bit too, as like that kind of guy. But neither of them can really shoot off the dribble, but they have pretty good feel as passers. I'm not sure if you're going to have when they're in the game and they're initiating your offense. I don't know if they're good enough passers to really compensate for their lack of pull up shooting. Like guys, if they run a pick and roll, guys are going to duck under the screen for sure, force them to shoot that. So, but if they're you're talking about a third emergency point guard type, that makes some sense. And I think that might be the best way to optimize this kind of player is put them in an on-ball role, in a limited role for like maybe 5-8 minutes a game in a emergency setting and just kind of see what you have.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he's going to play much when they have the full complement. I think early in the season, he might be a guy who's inactive pretty regularly or in the G League some, but I didn't mind that signing. You mentioned Bembry. He's someone who Hawks fans ask about a lot. He was a first round pick, which makes sense. He only you know, I guess 2-3 years ago now. So it's a situation where it's kind of a make or break year for Bembry. You know, he's a guy who might have his option to climb. He's in that sort of range where I think they're probably going to pick it up because it is relatively cheap. But at the same time, if he, you know, if he gets banged up again, or if there's some struggles in training camp and preseason, he might be a candidate for that. So I've always liked him. He's always been a guy that I've enjoyed his game, but there are some things that he's just not able to show at the NBA level. What do you make of him as someone who's a little bit, obviously not as dialed into the Hawks on a daily basis, but as someone who's seen him quite a bit?
Yeah, I love him as a prospect. I just love his his feel level. I mean, he can really feel the floor. He's got good team defense awareness. He's a good passer. I think he's a really underrated finisher, honestly. He's a pretty, I guess, sneaky athlete, if you want to call him that, around the rim. He's got good body control off 2 feet. Just comes down to the jump shot, man. That's what it is for basically all these guys. 11 of 30 last year from three, very small sample size. At least under Budenholzer, I read and kind of followed up on his development there. It seemed like he was getting a little bit more confident shooting off the catch, maybe catching in rhythm off the hop a little bit more. I still like him. I just think his ability as a cerebral player who isn't going to be a high-level defensive player because he doesn't have that physical stature that's elite, but I do think he can be kind of serve as a two-way player. I really do trust his ball handling is pretty good in the secondary setting. His passing is good in a secondary setting. It just comes down to, can he make a set shot, a catch and shoot shot from three? I don't think he's ever going to get there off motion, which is why, you know, I've kind of adjusted my calculus and how I approach the draft and why I valued someone like Kevin Huerter so much, because he has that in spades. I don't think Bembry's ever going to get there, but I like him a lot. I like him a lot more than the guy like Daniel Hamilton, for example, other guys we've talked about. I still would give him an opportunity to show that he can be a rotation player. He's had really bad luck with injuries. I just think this is kind of if he gets cut or he gets his option declined, I would actually buy low on him as a minimum guy next offseason and just see what you have.
Yeah, I do think defensively, he's a guy who's been actually pretty good playing down in like guarding ones. Like, he famously, I think the best moment of his career so far, which is kind of, I guess, not that important considering how long he's been banged up and that kind of stuff. But there was an entire half where he kind of took James Harden and kind of messed him up for about a half defensively. Like, he's been that kind of defender where he's like, he's playing down. He's not going to be that guy who's going to be guarding threes and fours. But at the same time, I do think there's some defensive ability there on ones and twos. But you said it. It's all about the shooting. Like, last year, he had some missteps, actually, with the ball in his hands. And I was actually frustrated by that because I've always thought he was going to be a good secondary creator. And he showed a little bit of that as a rookie. But I think he needs to play more. And a lot of it's just availability. Like, if you have a guy who's banged up like that, who's already a little bit older, he's kind of behind the eight ball in a lot of ways. And I'm hoping he's just healthy, because if he is, they'll at least have a fair opportunity to show his skills. It's just kind of a tough thing when now you have all these guys competing with him as well. Not that any of these guys that we're talking about are particularly impressive outside of Herter potentially, but there's still just more bodies for him to contend with now.
Yeah, and I definitely, you give Herter far more of the opportunity to give a guy like Bembry, because yes. I mean, Bembry's already older and he's lost time, and like you said, that's important for development. I mean, Bembry was never like a high upside guy, but those first couple years in the league, it's pretty integral to get assimilated and start working on your game and have that consistency as far as approach and practices and all that. And he just hasn't really had the opportunity to develop fully. So this definitely, I think you said it best, it's a make or break year for him, like it is for a lot of guys in that class. You just kind of see what you have. And I would give him a rotation spot, frankly, if he earns it in you know, training camp and preseason. I think I would bet on somebody like this because I do think the upside is like a rotation player. But again, it's kind of hard to be as optimistic as I think both of us were come the draft.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm hoping for big things. And hopefully, I guess not rooting, but it's one of those things where I like to see him be around. So the option pickup is something I'm looking for and monitoring quite a bit in training camp. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not that big of a deal from the Hawks perspective. I guess two guys that I wanted to ask you about, I'm saving one guy for later, that are a little bit more important, obviously, are Taurean Prince and John Collins. Those are guys are, I would say, number two and number three in some order in terms of the prospect analysis with the Hawks. Trae Young is the most high-profile guy, of course, but Collins and Prince are the more established players, and they were both pretty good last year. So let's just start with Prince. What do you make of him? My issue last year was that he kind of stopped playing defense, and that's something that was supposed to be his calling card coming in. I think he's still capable of it. It's a situation where you could probably attribute some of that to the fact that they weren't competing at a high level last year. I think he probably focused more on offense, and we saw some real growth there. But what do you make of him as a sort of a long-term prospect, knowing that he's a little bit older too, because obviously, you know, him, Prince and Memory were both veteran college guys in the draft.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think I kind of reflect I haven't watched nearly as much Hawks, of course, as you have, but from what I have seen, I don't think he's kind of the defender that he's made out to be by a lot of people. A lot of people say straight 3-and-D. I'm not sure if he's that level of defensive player yet.
He's not right now, I can tell you that.
Yeah, so I think that was his idea, right, coming out of the draft. We didn't see a lot of it at Baylor. It was hard to assess because they play the zone, so you can only really gauge some level of instincts, but it's not like he was switching on the guys and like the lateral quickness and stuff like that. It was just very hard to assess his defense in his zone like majority of the time with Baylor. So I've never really been as high just because there's a lot of uncertainty there, but I like his ability to shoot off the catch offensively. I think last year he was kind of stretched a little bit as far as role, what you want him to do offensively. He took a lot of off the dribble shots in the half court. I never really saw that necessarily as game for context. Took 196 shots off the dribble in the half court. I never really saw that in his projection. I saw him more of like a pretty much a straight 3-and-D who can attack closeouts a little bit. So I think that's important to take into the calculus when you assess his efficiency. And ideally, you want him more as a tertiary creator type, but he is really good off the catch. I mean, 92nd percentile in the half court last year. So he can do that. And if he can get that defensive energy and the IQ off the ball, if he can get that to the level that you were describing, I think the Hawks really have something here. I think he can be a low level starter in the league. I don't see the high upside, but I see the starting caliber effect because he is kind of what the game is craving right now.
Yeah, I mean, somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago what I thought he might get, you know, if he has a nice season this year, maybe an extension talks next year. It's really early to talk about that, but I think he can be a solid starter, especially if he starts playing defense again. I think as a rookie, he was actually a lot better defensively, and some of that's just that was his role on that team. That was a playoff team. He was coming in to basically just be athletic and play defense, whereas last year he had the ball in his hands a lot more. Shot the ball really well, I think better than I ever thought he would, to be honest with you. So if that's real, that's encouraging. At the same time, time. I do think some of the on-ball stuff late last year, a lot of NBA numbers can pretty much be ignored in April because April gets very weird, especially on a tanking team like the Hawks were. So I think some of that could be real, but I'm not, you know, I think there's a segment of the Hawks population that thinks he's going to be like his 20-point scorer now, and I don't really see that as a likely outcome. So I think the defense is the pivot skill, which is always weird because that's not where I thought he was going to be. But the offense, the catch and shoot stuff, and even off the move a little bit has been encouraging. So I do like Prince. I think it's a situation where if you're a rebuilding team and you have a rebuilding fan base, I think you get attached to your guys a little bit more. That's kind of common. So I think Prince probably has a little bit of an inflated worth to the local fan base more than nationally, but still I think he can play. And if you can get a star level player, you know, he was the 12th pick in the draft. That's kind of what you're looking for there. I think, you know, people hear lottery pick, which is what he was, but you know, late lottery, that's kind of all you want is a quality starter. I think he probably can be that.
Well, especially in that class too, which is out of the top level guys, it drops off pretty quickly. So I think that you're exactly right. I didn't realize that he had such, you know, high usage off screens. That's really pivotal to his projection. I think if you visualize the Hawks moving forward conceptually, playing next to Herter with Trae Young, all of those guys, if they can all shoot off motion, not a lot of teams have that as far as offensive dynamics. There's a lot of set shooters, and there's a huge difference in the NBA with being a set shooter versus an off movement shooter. So if Prince has that to his game and it gets to the level defensively that you described, I think he could be like a $11 to $15 million player a year. I don't see like star upside. I've never really seen that as a creator. I don't think he's a good enough passer, even though everybody seems to improve at least under Budenholzer in that system as a passer. Like John Collins showed way more. We'll probably get into him now. Way more as a passer as a rookie than he ever showed at Wake Forest. So we'll see how that transpires. But I don't see him being like a 20-point-per-game guy.
Oh no, yeah, that's probably a maybe this year if they put the ball in his hands a lot on a rebuilding team, maybe that's more realistic. But no, that's not something I see happening on at least on a good team in the future. Let's go to Collins now. Collins is really good. I think he definitely exceeded any rational expectation last year from me. I wasn't super low on him, but I wasn't also super high on that draft pick. I thought defensively I was worried a lot about him coming in, and I think there's still things to work on defensively, but he was far, far better than I ever thought he'd be defensively as a rookie at least. And he, you know, he showed a lot in summer league too, a lot of more sort of perimeter stuff. The Hawks are definitely emphasizing the perimeter with him. He even actually made an appearance on Wednesday night at this like preview event that the Hawks did and was talking about that, gave a couple of interviews talking about his perimeter game and his shooting. I think that's definitely a conscious emphasis. He's going to be playing more power forward now, but what do you make of him? Because that's he's kind of a tough evaluation in a lot of ways, especially because he is sort of the, at least last year was sort of like the only guy to evaluate that was like young like that, but now you have him and Trey and you have other guys. So what do you make of him? Because I think that's, he's almost a perfect one from a national versus local standpoint. That's very, very different.
Yeah, he's, in a macro sense, he gets compared to Kyle Kuzma a lot. They're definitely different players, but I think the general conception is, I think John Collins is good. I think Kyle Kuzma is good. It's how good can he be on a winning team? And that's a great question to have at this time, because if you already have a prospect that's good in his second year, you're doing really well. If you're drafting, you know, the late teens, it's a great draft pick. He's probably the guy I undersold the most in the draft. So I like a lot of his abilities. He definitely impressed me more defensively. I thought, like, the games I saw at Wake Forest, even in his sophomore year, I thought he was a train wreck defensively. As far as his awareness on the interior, it was really, really bad, in my opinion. So I thought he was going to maybe win as more of a switch guy. He has the athleticism. I didn't see the off-ball instinct, the reactionary stuff. And he's shown more of that as a pro. So I think that is the biggest step for me that I've seen in this game, because I tend to devalue bigs who aren't good defensively. And he's been good enough there where I think there's some upside. But offensively, I think he has several very special traits as far as a pick and potentially a dual pick and roll threat. We saw that in summer league as far as pick and pops. His form mechanically, if you watch him up close, it looks really fluid. He didn't take threes at Wake Forest, but even in the pre-draft process, he showed that. And that was something that people probably should have given more credence to, is the fact that he was able to shoot. He just didn't get the platform to do that in college. So I really like his form. I think he's going to be able to shoot threes above the break. We know what he can do as a dive guy. One of the quickest guys to the rim in the league for a big, has incredible body control. One of the few bigs that I've seen that can catch the ball in midair and adjust and finish, not dunks, but like touch finishes. You just don't see a lot of guys who can do those kinds of things. So very quick again to the rim, very awesome offensive rebounder, lob threat, guy who can pick and pop. put the ball on the floor a little bit. That's the biggest thing that stuck out to me. You touched on this about perimeter skill and summer league. Like, he took Jaren Jackson off the dribble twice and beat him. And that doesn't really happen that often with Jackson's length. And he legit beat him to the rim on spin moves and stuff. So if he can do that, and you get a guy again who can make a short roll pass, potentially make some decent reads, a guy who can dribble, pass, and shoot from the four spot. He could play some select five for sure. I think that's kind of the issue with him, right? He's kind of a tweener a little bit, but yep. If he develops that perimeter skill, maybe he's more of you can play him more at the four. Some matches you can play him at the five. I think if you're going to optimize him, you want him at the five, but there's some skill level there. So I think that that's the most intriguing part. And to me, I think he's a good player. I think he's definitely a good prospect. It's just how good on a winning team does he get?
Yeah, I've always thought that he was a five until sort of recently. I'm seeing more now that he can play the four. At the same time, I was always like, well, he's got to learn but at least be comfortable showcasing his jump shot, and which looks like it's going to be a focus this year. Let's see how much it goes in. But at the same time, it's something that he can certainly look good doing. He looked really good mechanically in summer league as a jump shooter. Kind of believe it when I see it in terms of how much it goes in, but something to monitor for sure. And listen, he's more comfortable with the ball in his hands than I thought he was going to be too. For me, it's defensively on the perimeter. Can he hold up as a full-time power forward in that way? We'll see. He's a great athlete, so like, he has the tools to do it, and he's not, that was the biggest concern from people as a center, was that he isn't long. Like, he has a sub 7 foot wingspan, and that was kind of what you would worry about with him playing full-time center. So I sort of get that, and that makes it for a tough evaluation, because defensively, you know, he probably can't be your primary rim protector, but he's still a guy who is not necessarily going to be a pure, you know, all court four either. So I like his talent. He's really good. And he'll be a part of the Hawks moving forward. I guess the big question is, like, how big of a part, like, if he's your third best player, what are you, kind of thing. So it's going to be tough to see what the Hawks are moving forward with Collins. But if he takes another step forward, then I'm sort of like, almost resigned to just being as wrong as possible on Collins, because I didn't love that pick. So hopefully he makes me look even sillier now. So like, if he has another huge step forward as a sophomore, so to speak, in the NBA, then I'll look even more silly, and that's fine, because I really like him.
Yeah, that's me too. I mean, I'm rooting for all these guys to succeed, and I don't mind being wrong. And I think that he's addressed some of the issues that I've had, kind of the 4-5 tweener dynamic being more of a defensive four and offensive five. Usually that's not a good mix, but he's improved.
I hate that.
Yeah, me too. Like, that's automatically what turned him off to me as a prospect. I was like, I'm not super with that, but he's shown enough progression to where maybe it's possible. Like, I do think one thing that he can do is protect the rim from the weak side. He has the range, he has the bounce. So he has that ability. If he can switch, conceptually, those should be his two main skills. So if he can do that defensively and he can be skilled enough to play the four, which is always the question on that end of the floor, then you really have something. So we'll kind of see how it translates. It's really early in the process. Obviously, the Hawks aren't going to be competitive, so they have the time and they have the ability to develop him a certain way. I love what you said about them emphasizing his perimeter play. If he can really do that, he becomes really interesting.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and I will say it does cover up a lot when he's such a good athlete. I do think I sort of underrated that even a little bit coming into the draft. Like, he's a better athlete than I thought, even though I already knew he was a good athlete, but it's better in person. I think he's probably better shaped too, which helps, but he's someone who could fly around and be very, very impressive. Like, I think if you're trying to find, like, the high-end, people always ask for, like, high-end comparisons to John Collins, and, like, you hear about, like, Amari Stoudemire. He's not going to be that. But I do think if you're trying to find, like, that perfect, you know, big name comparison, that's my favorite one. Even if I don't, like, he's obviously not going to be that, where, you know, Amari used to average, you know, 27 and 10 a game. That's not going to happen. But I don't hate that. Like, I've been looking for that perfect guy. It's not really out there, but that's the kind of, you know, archetype. Maybe that might work.
Exactly right. And I think that the thing about the Amari comparison, I agree with you, there's a lot of similarities there. And when you're a dynamic athlete, you can compensate for a lack of reaction time. That's something I've noticed and noted over time as I've done the draft. Like Jaylen Brown, for example, not the most high level thinker, but when you're a 95th percentile athlete in the NBA conservatively, that helps a lot. But the Amari thing is interesting. And that's kind of why I devalue Collins in the draft as well, because how many people are even put in the position to be Amari? You know what I mean? Like, that was one of the most unique teams in the history of basketball as far as playing him at the five. Very modern concepts before they became actual real concepts, playing with one of the best playmaking guards of all time. And Steve Nash is just kind of an interesting parallel, because Trey Young, his ceiling for me is Steve Nash kind of player.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, we've already sussed that out in the pre-draft podcast, but it's just kind of interesting to me. There's so many modern principles on this Hawks team. It's just kind of fascinating.
Yeah, no, I was already hearing the Amari stuff, and then they got Trey, and now it's gotten louder. I think the at least from Hawks fans, optimistic Hawks fans, their favorite comparisons are Blake Griffin and Amari Stoudemire. So it's like, all right, well, two All-NBA guys. That's fantastic. But
yeah,
no.
that's a good place to be. I'm not sure he's as coordinated as Blake or as good of a passer. Like Blake is just special. I think Bagley, for example, like him and Collins are kind of similar to me. I actually might take Collins, frankly, in that comparison. Ooh. I think that they're kind of similar players. So that's kind of the archetype I would go to. And we'll see like who fares better at the four, because I think both are going to play at the four.
Yeah, that's not crazy. I think people would look at their draft position, obviously, and just be like, what are you talking about? But Collins is safer at this moment. We know more about Collins, I'll say that. Like Bagley did not look good in summer league, which doesn't... It's not cause for like super duper alarm, but at the same time, like Collins is certainly almost, I want to say almost guaranteed to overachieve his draft slot already. Cause like, even if he's just the same guy he was last year, that's a great pick at 19. So I don't know. It's definitely an interesting comparison. And I think that was one of the reasons why people, including me, did not want Marvin Bagley to fall to the Hawks, because they're just so similar and it would not have been the greatest pairing in the world.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Very similar conceptually how you want to use them. But I do think that comparison may be the most apt. I think Collins is actually a little bit quicker. I trust his handle more, especially what we saw in summer league. I do kind of buy his quickness. When you can, like, again, when you can beat Jaren Jackson one-on-one twice, and he's one of the best defensive rookies I've ever seen coming into the league for a big, like, that's, you're doing something right.
Yeah. Collins is a great athlete, to be sure. All right, one more guy I have to ask you about, and you know it's coming. It's Tyler Dorsey. you got some acclaim during summer league for your Tyler Dorsey take. So I'm going to clear the floor and let you talk about Tyler Dorsey for a moment. I think I'm actually closer to you than the consensus on Tyler Dorsey. But what do you make of him? Because there's a segment of Hawks fans that really likes Tyler Dorsey, and I think part of that's just because he's a Hawks draft pick, so you just like invest more time in him. But I think I'm more with you on this one.
Yeah, I just don't know like what to do with this kind of archetype, really. Like, he's a scorer. He takes a lot of shots. He's got tunnel vision. If he gets hot, he can, you know, fill it up for sure. I think he's a high-level like European player. If he ends up going back to Greece, I think he's going to be an incredible player in that setting. But in the NBA, he's kind of like a spark scorer. And I just don't know if the value of that is that high. I don't think he's a good enough overall shooter consistently to be a good player. He's not a good enough distributor. I mean, in summer league, I kind of was lashing out a little bit just because he was so damn tunnel vision. Like, he wasn't hitting Trey open shots. He was just basically chucking. And I hate that in summer league. And like, so many people do it. He's just one of the most frustrating players to watch for me. But after I said that, he started playing well, started making some good passes. So I was intrigued there, I guess. But as a player conceptually, just not a lot of, I don't put a lot of credit on players like this, not a lot of emphasis, just because the defense is probably not going to be there. And if you're just a shooter and you're not a good enough shooter, I don't know what the role is on, especially a good team in the NBA.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing with Dorsey, has always been like, he has to be an elite shooter for it to work. And I'm not sure he's going to be that. Like, I'm pretty confident it's not going to be that. Like, I think, you know, at his size, you know, he's 6'4", 6'5". He's a pure shooting guard. Can't really play up defensively. He is a really good rebounder, which has to be said. Like, that's probably his best skill right now, which is kind of funny. Like, he's an excellent rebounder for a shooting guard, but that's not a primary skill, you know what I mean? Like, it's more of like a secondary nice thing to have. And the shooting is, he's a good shooter, but it's really tough to build around that. And obviously you would not be building around Tyler Dorsey. Like, for instance, you know, playing Dorsey and Trae Young together in an NBA game would not go well defensively right now, in any way. So it's a tough spot. I do think, like, People get attached to draft picks. He was, I think, the 41st pick in the draft. So that slot, if you miss there, it's not the biggest thing in the world. And I do think, like, he's a borderline NBA player. It's like he's not a complete non-NBA player, but I do kind of lean your way that he'd be better off in a situation in Europe somewhere where he had the ball in his hands more. Like, he'll probably stick around the league for a while, I would think, but it wouldn't blow me away if 2-3 years from now he's just like a primary option in Europe, playing well and making a lot of money, and that's good. I like Tyler. I've talked to him, you know, numerous times. I'm rooting for him to succeed, but I just don't see the archetype either. It's a situation where he just has to be really, really, really good as a shooter or be a better defender, and I don't think either of those is, like, likely.
Yeah, for me, he'd have to be Buddy Hield-esque to be an NBA
and he's
player,
not
like that level of shooter. Yeah, he's
I
not
mean
that.
And
so that
I think he went where he went in the draft because he had that great tournament and he showed you know, he showed scoring and shooting ability, but even at the college level, he was not the like elite shooter. He's a good shooter, but for the whole thing to work, he either has to be good enough to play on the ball, which he's not at the NBA level, or he's got to be a great shooter, and I don't see either one of those happening.
That's exactly right. I think the degree of shooting, the difference between, you know, being an over 40% shooter and being like a dead eye off movement shooter, I think he would have a chance if that was the case, and he would just function in that role. But unless you are that good, I mean, you can be like a 14th, 15th guy, but I think ultimately NBA teams and executives are going to try to get guys with more upside in those situations, maybe more established veterans. So unless he did emerge and become Buddy Hield, which I don't think he's going to, I would bet heavily against that. I don't really know what his role is in a rotation.
Yeah, I kind of wish he was 6'7", you know? Like, I think he's more like 6'4", standing next to him. I don't think he's, like, even 6'5", where he's listed. If he was 6'7", and could play some 3 and kind of function in that way, it'd be a lot more interesting. But there's just so many guys that have similar skill sets to him that aren't very good NBA players, if that makes sense. Like, if you just look at guys who present similar physical measurables and similar talent on the court, most of those guys don't work out, and the ones that do become great shooters, basically. That's kind of, or lockdown defenders, and the defensive sting is just not going to happen. So maybe he becomes a 42% three-point shooter, and we're not talking about this in the right way, but that doesn't seem super likely.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as the combo guard size wings who are basically straight two guards. They don't have the defensive versatility. If you go back over time and you look at who succeeds in the NBA, a lot more 6'6", 6'7", guys do than 6'5", 6'4.5", guys. It's just that size difference, the defensive ability. It's just huge historically.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, before I let you go, I have to ask, I am of the mind that I think Trey might struggle as a rookie. At the same time, I think he's my favorite rookie of the year bet. And I'm not sure how much of a degenerate you are, and have you seen the rookie of the year odds, but Trey's 10-1 to win the rookie of the year. I think that's like a really intelligent bet, because there's a lot of scenarios where he's not great as a rookie. But if it hits, like, the numbers are going to be there. And I think like his upside will be pretty apparent early on. Does that make sense to you? I'm not asking you to be like a full on handicapper, but do you see a scenario where Trey wins rookie of the year? I'm not projecting that by any means, but is that a plausible outcome in your mind?
It is plausible. He would be one of the 5 candidates or so that I would choose. I would lean really heavily towards Luka. I think that he's going to be, not just based on my projection of him, but just based on his role and the fact I think Dallas could be maybe sneaky respectable this year, especially with DeAndre Jordan.
They're trying to win, yeah.
Exactly right. So that factors into the calculus. I think from a number standpoint, Trey is going to be productive. Not sure if he's going to start or Jeremy Lin is. He's going to play a lot, pretty clearly. It's just very hard. We saw last year, like, these aren't the same players, actually polar opposites as far as Dennis Smith and De'Aaron Fox, and they were bad their rookie years. It's very, very hard to be good if you're a lead ball handler, if you're an initiator type in your rookie year, because that is the hardest thing to do in the NBA, is to have the ball and make decisions, be efficient as a scorer. I agree, though. Trey's is different because his shooting ability, his ability to play off the ball as a shooter, like, solely, I wasn't impressed with his off-ball movement in summer league and all that. I really wish he would improve there, but I think he's going to be a kind of a different egg in that respect, just because he's such a damn good shooter and such a good passer, and his situation, I could see it materializing, but I don't necessarily think I'd bet on it, just because, again, the threshold for being good as a rookie for a point guard, just not many guys are. Like, Michael Carter Williams for the Sixers, I guess you could throw that out. I think that was a freaking anomaly. So
yes. No, I'm with you on all of that. I think I wish he was better off the ball. It's one thing I kind of like about the Jeremy Lin thing. I didn't like that trade for the Hawks, but having a guy that's like a starter level quality player at the position allows Trey that I think he knows. I think the Hawks definitely know that he's going to have to improve off the ball. So they're going to try that and see how he looks there. I think he just doesn't know what to do right now, honestly. I mean, in summer league, it was a combination of not knowing what to do and also probably being out of gas to a certain extent. It's tough when you're a primary ball handler for 30 plus minutes to suddenly be like playing off the ball and running around screens. It's tough.
Yep.
But he needs to know how to do that. that's a big swing skill for him, in my opinion. Because I mean, the passing is real, but at his size, being able to like maneuver screens. I mean, I don't want to use the Steph comparison too liberally because I don't like the Steph comparison very much. But watch Steph run off screens, and you'll see what you'll see part of that archetype that Trey doesn't have right now.
Exactly right. Now that's why I didn't ultimately make that comparison. One of the many reasons, I mean, it's just unfair, frankly,
Agreed.
But that's the one main skill. That's the predominant skill that Trey didn't show at Oklahoma. A lot of that was role usage, but you see that carry over to summer league, and now it doesn't really seem like a role thing. It seems more like an instinct thing. Like, he's just not that kind of guy. He's more like Dennis Smith, where his first inclination when he passes the ball is to get it back. It's not to create space for himself off the ball. If Trey can do that and leverage his shooting, that is such an easier avenue to potential points in the league. It's so hard to create everything off the bounce. If you can really use your gravity threat as a shooter, I mean, that's part of the reason that Steph is so special, is because, like, he does that. He gets easy baskets because he knows how to work off screens, and they're easier plays. It's easier to shoot off the catch than it is a contested shot off the dribble. So I'm very curious to see if Trey develops that. If he does, that changes his trajectory some, and it gives him a lot more safety on the offensive side and a lot higher ceiling, frankly.
Yeah, I would love that from Trey, to be sure. But your point about, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Dennis Smith, they're very different players. But in general, it's something I've been saying a lot recently, and really for years now. Rookies are bad. I think fans just forget how bad rookies are in general because of the few examples of guys who aren't bad as rookies. But, you know, 95% of rookies are bad basketball players. Like, I was listening to a podcast today, I think it was a Real GM with Danny LaRue and David Locke and Adam Morris. And, like, they were reading off some of the guys in David Locke's numbers, who, of course, is the father of this podcast network that you're listening to right now. And I think his numbers, the five worst offensive players in the league last year were all rookies. And it's like, yeah. And it was like, it was always high-profile guys, too. It was Dennis Smith, and it was Lonzo Ball, and these guys. It was like, yep, that makes sense. They're all rookies, and they're all bad, because that's what happens especially, you know, one-and-done guys who are 19. They're playing, you know, primary ball handlers in the NBA. They're just not likely to be very good. There's not really a track record for that, other than, like, Chris Paul. That's basically it.
Yep. Especially like the lead ball handlers, when you have like Dennis Smith had like a 29% usage, which is like freaking absurd for a rookie.
Which Trey might, Trey might have a number close to that if he's allowed to, if that makes sense. Like, with the way the Hawks roster is made up, if they just decide, there's a scenario which the Hawks just say, all right, Trey, here it is, and let him do that. I wouldn't necessarily advise that. But there might be a month or two this year where he has that kind of usage rate. And it probably won't go well, but it might be like a learning curve kind of thing for him, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know. It's really, I mean, I'm just thinking of last year, Dennis Schroeder had a 30% usage rate for the season, and he's not around. Like, somebody has to use possessions on this team, and it might just be Trey.
And that's exactly what I was getting at in the initial bet of probably not betting on him because of that. It's just very hard to be efficient when you have like a 28% usage and you're a rookie. And you, especially for Trey, when he has to learn the nuances of creating separation, timing, all of this stuff, adjust to NBA length. It's just a lot to ask of a 19-year-old to come in and take that kind of mantle, creating against like superior athletes, guys that he's never played against really consistently as a basketball player. So it's just like Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell, those guys are historical outliers as far as their ability to produce immediately. That is much more of the exception than the norm, especially for primaries.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'm gonna let you get out of here, Cole, but I do appreciate you coming on the podcast. I will plug, and I'll let you do this as well. I will plug the show that inspired this when you and Sam were talking about prospects forever, and there was probably 30 minutes of Hawks talk on one of these podcasts. But please plug anything that you would like, including that pod and your writing, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I'll start there with Game Theory Podcast. Right now we are in the middle of the Pacific Division, which is coming out. We have the rest of the divisions up. I think for the Hawks, we went pretty deep. We might have gone like 45 minutes on
that. Yeah, it was long. You don't really hear that much Hawks talk on a national podcast very often. I was very pleased by that. It was fun.
There you go. The Lakers will get probably an hour 30 minutes. So if you're at all interested in them, that was a very long one just because they have a lot of good prospects that might not be elite, but just a lot to cover there. So check that out on the Game Theory. I'm on there frequently guesting maybe once or twice a week. And then check out thestepin.com if you haven't done that. We were very high on Trey, so if you want to read about him, we had a lot of articles about him, a lot of write-ups last year contextualizing him. We were also very high on Kevin Huerter. We had him as a lottery guy definitively, I think, on the site. So we have a lot of in-depth breakdowns on him as well. So if you want to learn about 2019 guys, which I'm sure Hawks fans will be excited about.
Oh, yes.
We're getting into those prospects right now. Fortunately, like Duke and Kentucky are playing these international tournaments. Duke is in Canada right now. So RJ Barrett, we got to see Zion Williamson last night. I've had three in-depth profiles on those guys at the top level, including Nasir Little as well. So there's a lot of content about 2019. So check that out on the Stepien.
Yeah, Hawks fans will definitely be interested in that. I'm sure I will be begging you to come on the pod to talk about 2019 prospects, because by the time we get to November, December, when it's very clear the Hawks are out of anything, there'll be a lot of focus on 2019. And I have some film study to do myself. I think I'm only familiar with like seven guys in this class right now. So it's going to have to be a learning curve for me as well. And I'll be reading you to help me with that. So I appreciate it, man.
Of course, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
As for everybody else, we'll be back again next week with new content, barring some surprise, because nothing happens in August, as Cole well knows. So we'll see you guys next week.